Today on Building the Open Metaverse.
I think it's going to be, I'm going to use it for an hour and I just want to use it for an hour, right? I don't want to pay like a subscription for a month or a year or whatever that is. So I firmly believe that the next model that we all have to work to is consumption, which will make things even more accessible.
Welcome to Building the Open Metaverse, where technology experts discuss how the community is building the open metaverse together. Hosted by Patrick Cozy from Cesium and Mark Petit from Epic Games.
So hello everybody and welcome to our show Building the Open Metaverse, the podcast where technologists share their insight on how the community is building the open metaverse together. My name is Mark Petit from Epic Games and my co-host is Patrick Cozy from Cesium. Patrick, how are you today?
Hi Mark, hi everybody, I'm doing fantastic.
So great, today we're going to talk about model creation, digital twins, and we have two fantastic guests for that from Autodesk. So Reggie Arasu, you are the Executive Vice President and CTO at Autodesk. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark and Patrick. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me here.
And also we have with us today Diana Colella, Senior Vice President in charge of the Media Entertainment Division at Autodesk. Welcome, Diana.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
So, Raji, you have an engineering background and you've led teams focused on emerging technologies from AI to AR to computational geometry to generative design. And Diana, you have a product and strategy background with 25 years at Autodesk where you've seen many transformational business models. We'd love to kick off the podcast to hear about your journey to the metaverse in your own words. Raji, you want to go first?
I grew up in India. I always enjoyed and loved watching science helping us in unimaginable things, doing unimaginable things. In 1983, just watching Guillaume Bluford, get into space and people landing on the moon, that's how I grew up watching those episodes. Early open heart surgery episode that was shared, I think I telecasted by Channel 8 and Arizona Heart Institute. Those were like my action movies for me. Anyway, fast forward, my love for science and things that are totally out there led me to the accidental discovery, embracing computer engineering. It was third year in the university that I joined. We didn't really know what it would do and how things would come together. The courses were still being defined. And the confusion with my family was, hey, you're a computer engineer. You should be able to rewire the electrical lines in our house. And I would be like, I don't think they're teaching me that. It was definitely a lot of mystery around, what it really was and the courses covered there. But right out of college, I caught the wave where the industry was going through a transition from hand-drafted design to computer-aided design. My first project, believe it or not, was a large-scale map digitization for the next gen phone line system for the state using AutoCAD. And here I am full circle back working at Autodesk and starting off with some of the same technologies. My background after that first project was leading tech and business transformation for e-commerce, payment, fintech, in addition to establishing some high performing teams. I would say there are some common themes. And they are about delivering customer value through some of the golden insights that you get out of exponential data signals that you capture. And then improving productivity and competitive edge for the company through a fairly trusted, highly scalable, and cloud-enabled platform. Those things are common themes across all of these. And even today at Autodesk, these are some of the themes that I'm focused on.
Very cool. Thank you for sharing. Quite a journey thus far. Diana?
My way to the metaverse is actually from a completely business angle. So I actually am an accountant. I was working for Discrete Logic, which was the Flame product, and fell in love with media and entertainment. Autodesk acquired us, and then we acquired a bunch of other companies that were part of media and entertainment. But for me, I remember watching the product manager who was working for us and thinking to myself, like, I want that job. And I remember going to my boss at the time and he was like, yeah, you can't get that job. Like, that's not a job you can get, right? And I was like, no, but you know, like technology, they have to think about the business side. And, you know, sometimes we don't think about the business side. And so I started my path towards learning product management. I worked in operational roles. I worked in sales roles. I worked in support and services so I could learn more about the products. I learned, you know, about the customers. It took me almost 10 years to get to product management, but I did finally get there. And I've been in product and strategy ever since.
Fantastic. Thank you, Diana. So let's jump right in one of the topics that we like on this podcast, which is open standards and content creation. So it's interesting because with AutoCAD, Revit, Inventor, Fusion 360, 3ds Max, and Maya, Autodesk plays a huge role in 3D content creation. So many of the models that we will interact with in the metaverse originate in an application built by Autodesk. So what is Autodesk's point of view on interoperability and open standards? Who wants to take this one? Reggie, you want to give it a shot or?
I want to start where what attracted me to Autodesk, because I'll give you a little bit of perspective. You know, we all believe that relationships and people are everything in our lives, but gee, in reality, we associate a lot of value to the physical assets around us, right? We collect them over time. The living spaces, our cars, our gadgets, the content that we consume. There's so many of these. We take pride in them and we feel like a sense of achievement. So as consumers, we demand more and more out of this. We want smart cities. We want to use the latest tech. We want less maintenance. We want it sustainable. We want it all connected. This is a lot of things that we aspire to have. And this is where Autodesk comes in. Because everything we create over the decades that we have existed is about designing digital spaces and physical spaces that are connected, that are smart. We see that as being a thing that we want to enhance our lives, and our customers do that for us using these tools. I mean, a simple example is something like our InnoWise Info 360 Insight. It provides this amazing operational ability to know where your water supply and the water utilization. And it provides some mechanisms to waste less time, money, trying to sort of manage these utilities, right? Like really boring stuff, but really important in our lives, right? So we want to be able to enhance our living. And that's what it is for me. Based on your question, I think AutoCAD, Revit, Inventor, all of these tools have been amazing. This is what our content creators create. Someone like Dan has so much sort of exposure to how this has changed their lives of a content creator, and she can talk a lot about it. But for me, I think when I look at it, content creators have used over decades Autodesk as a platform to create content and assets. And they have done this with both digital and physical worlds. That's the beauty of this. We must deliver seamless distribution, traceability, and simplicity in how these content creators operate through these metaverse and marketplaces and all of that stuff. But there are some near and dear problems that need to be addressed. They're foundational before we get here. And there are inefficiencies created by siloed data and technologies that lead to lost time and handoffs, that lead to loss in productivity across architecture, construction, manufacturing, media, and entertainment. In all of these industries, a big problem that we all face. I mean, there are large files that have exchanged hands or data that needs to be transformed before you get from one process to the other. And that gets in the way of these creators. So even without metaverses, portability of assets has become a pressing problem and a significant time and money savior if you do this right. And that's where Autodesk is invested, and we're committed to open standards. But not only that, first fixing interoperability with the data that we have, and then embracing open standards such as USD and GLTF and OpenColor.io. These are all things that we are leaning in, and we're making sure that we are part of that. And companies like us, with customers using this for real world use cases, can help push the adoption of these open standards. We love USD, and Diana and team have embraced this in media and entertainment in a big way because it's given them huge benefits of performance for fairly complex scenes, and the community, the support to actually adopt multiple renderers and stuff like that. But our teams are taking it a step forward. Our teams that are working on Fusion, which is one of our manufacturing design product, They've contributed back to USD, and they provided support for interactive CAD/CAM and, you know, CAE with things like text and line styles and billboards and 2D. The thing that you can only get out of people who are very close to the manufacturing industry. So that's what they've done. They've extended USD and made it actually applicable for manufacturing and the needs of design and manufacturing. That's the kind of stuff that will happen when you bring closer and closer to companies like us who are working with customers, working with real life use cases. These data standards will evolve, and that's the role we play.
Yeah. So maybe a follow-on question for you, Diana, is more the business angle. So, you know, the metaverse is the internet embracing real-time 3D, so we expect a huge explosion and a democratization of content creation. So first, is that a view that I'd order that you share, that the tools need to become easier to use and more accessible? And in that respect, you know, what would be the right business model for those tools to succeed?
Yeah. So it's funny because like 10 years ago, we talked about the content boom and trends, you know, how in strategy, we always talk about the content boom. And then, you know, streaming came. And now it's like it's not ending. It's not going to end, right? Because now you have the metaverses. And guess what you need in the metaverse is the content. So I actually do believe in democratization. I think there's going to be more and more content creators out there, especially with the metaverses. And I think that that democratization and the tools have to be not just accessible and easier to use, but even affordable, which I think is important. So I think one, and that's why I think there's room for all of us. Like, I think whether it's Autodesk, whether it's Side Effects, Blender, like, I think there's going to be so much content that's getting created that we can actually complement each other and all the things that we're doing. I think accessibility. So the interesting thing is we went from being a perpetual business into a subscription business. And I could tell you that by doing that, we increased our user base, you know, like by tenfold, because all of a sudden it didn't cost, you know, $4,000 to buy the product. You know, it cost $125 a month, for example. And so you saw people would just, you know, rent it, or at the time it was called rental. It wasn't called subscription when Adobe first came out with it. And then the rest of us also. But I firmly believe that the next piece has to be consumption. I think that, and I've believed this, and it's not new. I'm not the only person who said this, but I do think that the business models start first in media and entertainment. And I really think that things like rendering, like you see our customers want to render and they want, you know, by compute hour or minutes or things like that. And I think they're going to be like that with the tools. I think it's going to be, you know, I'm going to use it for an hour and I just want to use it for an hour, right? I don't want to pay like a subscription for a month or a year or whatever that is. So I firmly believe that the next model that we all have to work to is consumption, which will make things even more accessible and more price efficient for people to use it when they need it.
Great. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about digital twins, right? So for many folks, especially those in AEC, one of the main tenets for the metaverse is digital twins. And Autodesk, you recently launched Tandem this last spring. So we'd love to hear about, you know, Autodesk's vision for digital twins, how the launch went, you know, what you've been learning.
Yes, digital twins is an area of focus for us at Autodesk, and Tandem is our digital twin offering. We're currently targeting it on our AEC industry, but something that will actually go across across industries, and it's almost a platform play if you think about it that way. There is a strong interest from our existing AEC customers as well as what we consider as building owners. So both of them fairly interested in the solution that we provide. We enable our customers to build this digital twin, and they use all kinds of data to be able to do this. First, they pull data from our design tools like Revit. They also pull data from that is captured in our Autodesk construction blog, which is our BIM data. All of that stuff comes together in sort of firing up this digital twin. And it provides them a dynamic, multi-dimensional view of how a facility is designed, built, or is in the process of getting built and performing through its life cycle. So it's a complete life cycle of that facility and that project. It's more immersive and realistic way to digitally simulate and experience that impact of the design. And as we connect Tandem to operational systems and sensors, it's both synchronizing and in real time actually creating this environment, or this digital world that instantaneously can be handed over to an owner. It's much better than the traditional handover mechanisms that we've had. And it improves operability and sort of that confidence that, you know, this is going to also inform my future design, because in many cases, these facilities are going through just refreshes after refreshes of redesign, right? And so it's really important for them to feed the operating and the performance data back into the design data. And so you can imagine a digital twin actually firing all the way from a planning process all the way to operate and back again to design. It's more circular. It's going to drive the circular nature of how the life cycle evolves versus the serial nature of how things have happened in the past. And with Tandem, one of our largest data center operators is eliminating about 6 to 9 months of operational, you know, just from day one of being operational ready to actually operate in your facility. And for me personally, I think it's accurate. I think what you said, which is digital twins is the first manifestation of the metaverse. From what I call them, as you know, we kind of kid about it, there are mini-verses. I can see where a metaverse representation of my home, which links a digital twin of my car, my solar system, then my water system, and my neighborhood, all of this sort of merging and a group of these digital twins coming together to interoperate and sync in real time. So I have like this sort of view of my world and my address in many ways. And I think that's why these mini verses and getting them right, getting them to work with each other is going to be the future of how the metaverse building blocks are born. And that's why I completely agree with you. It's this concept of like, you know, it's the first manifestation of a metaverse.
What I find interesting is that, you know, words like, being able to be immersive and all these things, this is all like M&E technology. And I think, you know, obviously Unreal Engine, right? Like you see now players that have been in media and entertainment that can actually enable these type of things in industries like manufacturing and architecture, engineering, construction, which I don't think everybody thought was going to be the case 10 years ago. And I think that's where our industry from a media and entertainment perspective has a big impact on these other industries, especially digital twin, because all, you know, that's what we're talking about as well from media and entertainment technology. So anyway, I find that just interesting.
No, Diana, that is so right, because the real high resolution and visualization and simulation of what game engines are capable of providing is going to make this really an immersive and interactive experience for many people. So that's absolutely right.
Yeah, no, it's kind of fascinating to see that the highly valuable data used to be the BIM model or the CAD model, and now it's shifting over to that the most valuable piece of data, you know, gradually becomes a digital twin. So let's stay on the topic of data. At Autodesk University, Andrew Anagnos, your CEO, spoke a lot about common data environments and open data initiatives, and mentioned that Autodesk sees Forge as the way to provide greater interoperability. So can you speak to what you're trying to, your goals with the Forge platform?
Mark, I think one thing Diana mentioned is she said in the future, content providers will see many, many different tools. Like you talk of democratization or even commoditization. I think it's going to be many, many tools and technologies will be used to create content. But data continues to be the crucial backbone. If you don't solve for granularity of data or metadata capture, if you don't solve for lineage, traceability, and we don't create a connected digital thread to this entire life cycle of the project, I think it will continue to be a big laborious task for all the content providers to sort of create this again and again. It's almost impossible to fire up a digital twin that I talked about if all the data live in their silo. So it's almost foundational to everything we are imagining together here that we solve for some basics. And we are doing this with what you might have heard Andrew talk about through a common data exchange. What that does is it creates granular cloud-based data models. And it also creates a data transport model that is traceable, secure, and enables provisional sharing. because I think that those are all super important when you're sharing data across trust boundaries. And then we create a consistent way to find all your project and product data in one place. So that's kind of what we call as common data exchange. And by doing this, I think we amplify productivity for artists and creators. I'll tell you a few examples. When you talk about granularity of data, we expose some of the granular data through our APIs to some of our manufacturing customers. They were able to leverage this data and generate a bill of materials in minutes through our APIs. In media and entertainment, artists lose valuable time today finding assets. Like, they're searching for assets. They're sometimes creating these assets from scratch. We believe that some of these products would actually improve searchability and version control and shave away a lot of time from our artists in being able to create these scenes and the assets. The second one, I think, improves productivity in a big way is interoperability. Our customers can build these connectors that can move it between products, sometimes Autodesk products, sometimes even non-Autodesk products. For example, non-Autodesk product design data could come into Revit. And sometimes our customers pull Revit data into things like Microsoft Power Automate or other tools. And you could do this in a real-time way when you have API and accessibility to these things. And we believe some of these connectors would be written by us, and some of them will be written by our community. And this is all within that common data experience. And this sits within what we call at Autodesk Forge, our platform. And through Forge, we can actually expose these APIs that give you the granular as well as interoperable data. And through Forge, we can also make this data available in the form of other open data formats that we have talked about, which is like USD or OpenBIM in AEC. So this is really the foundational piece that enables open standards. It also enables in the future for multiple products to work together, reduces the handoffs, and will be one day we can fire up these digital twins and metaverses pretty quickly because the data is all in place.
Let's move on to virtual production. So with Chakrid and Maya, Autodesk is at the heart of virtual production workflows. And what role do you see open source and open standards playing in this area?
So first of all, I mean, things that now we're able to enable, like with the Maya Live Link with Unreal, for example, makes that virtual production so much, and with Chakrid as well. I think USD kind of changed the game for everyone. Being able to now work together with the standards that are in place. I mean, like, we have to still keep building on it, but I do think that that's made a big, significant change in terms of how we're working together. I think, you know, products like, obviously, Maya has had APIs for a long time. I'm a big believer, by the way. So one is I'm very supportive of standards, but I'm also very supportive of open source. I think companies who think they're going to build it all by themselves, I think that's not a great place to be. So I think that is an area for us that we're really focused on. That's why we want to take part in all of these open standards and even looking at some of open sourcing ourselves. Like, we're looking at a review tool that we have called RV, and we're looking to open source that, which is highly used by our customers, highly used in the industries. And we're like, you know, AWSF, we're like, hey, we want to make review an open source project. And we're like, okay, like, we're in. let's do this. We are still waiting for them, but I still think that we're going to do that. I think it's extremely important as we're going to continue to scale that we have to have these open source and standards conversations. And obviously the Metaverse Standards Committee started this week. I think they had a meeting, and I'm very excited about that as well. I think it's great to have all these people around the table and have these conversations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm glad you're calling out the difference between open standards and open source, because I think that's where we are. I think we have to reconcile, you know, how open source project and open standards will converge into, because we can only afford one metaverse, right? So we'll need to resolve our nuances and differences. So another topic, which is, I'm sure, you know, important for the two of you, and the cloud is clearly at the center of Autodesk strategy across all market verticals. So Can you give us a little bit of a sense of the adoption that we've seen of cloud in all of those workflows?
I can take that. We are definitely seeing an increase in cloud adoption across industries. Part of this, the pandemic actually boosted adoption in several key areas, but especially in parts of our customer workflows where virtualization is feasible and collaboration is needed. In M&E, we were starting to see even a few cloud-only studios appear, you know, such as Untold Studios and a few other examples. And we expect that to continue to grow. Whether it's BIM 360, Fusion 360, ShotGrid, or Moxion, some of these products that we have, our customers are increasingly adopting our cloud solutions, which is one reason why we're leaning into cloud with the Autodesk platform we're building. We're starting with data in the cloud. This enables real-time sort of remote collaboration. That's the reason why sort of we are, you know, focusing there first. However, we need to figure out the compute part of it. There are still barriers such as cost, bandwidth, latency. All these are factors that limit broader adoption of the cloud. So specifically for compute, we are taking an hybrid approach where some of our customers want localized work with thin clients on powerful machines that they already own. And in some cases, like our students, they use Fusion 360. They want to run all of that on the cloud on their Chrome device. It'll be magical one day if at the runtime we can figure out how to auto-detect your compute power and storage on your local machine and adjust accordingly. So we decide which part to run on the cloud and where we run locally. I think that will happen. That day will come. As cloud technologies and disruptors like 5G, multi-access edge computing services, all of these evolve, I think there is going to be a place where we can capitalize that sort of capability and build for it. But I think that would be the right place to be, is where it magically happens for you. We can either use your local compute and storage, or we be able to take you to the cloud and elastically sort of, you know, enhance that experience. That's what we would like to be as a target state. But there's a lot of focus internally for creating a platform that's cloud enabled. And because the primary thing we want to focus on is real time and real remote collaboration for our customers.
Yeah, Reggie, you had me have a flashback. I think it was 2009 where Autodesk tried to deliver AutoCAD trial over the internet using the OnLive technology. So that was like, I probably remember it.
There are two veterans here from Autodesk, so I'm sure there's a ton of stories.
So Diana, long story, but it was very promising, and it's actually, it ended up working. So Diana, you recently acquired Tangent Lab and Moxion. How does this fit in your strategy?
I think it was like maybe 6 or 7 years ago, we have like this whole CTO council thing that we do at Autodesk. And we asked the question on like, hey, what does everybody think about the cloud? And everybody was like, no way. No way am I putting my data on the cloud, which, you know, was super interesting. And I don't think they thought it was going to be as prevalent as I think it is today. I do think that COVID, like Raji said, it has absolutely accelerated that. So companies like Moxion, so I'll start with Moxion. Moxion's an onset tool completely done on the cloud. People during COVID were not able to go on set, right? And there's hundreds of people on set. And so what they were able to do was, they had this product that they were working on that was all cloud-based, you know, very secure, all of a sudden be highly used by customers because they were able to be on set and look at shots and make decisions right there. So for us, like, we do think about production in the cloud. It has been something we've been thinking about since we acquired ShotGrid many, many years ago. Because what we believe is that in the film space, there's a lot of inefficiencies and our customers want to solve that. They want not only Autodesk to solve that, but the industry to solve it, to be honest. And so I think when Raji talked about Forge, that is the beauty for us around getting to platform for media and entertainment, is that it wouldn't only just be Autodesk, it would also be, you know, the industry players that will be able to help us, our customers actually build these production in the cloud workflows. For Tangent Labs, one of the hardest problems as we know, because we've talked about how many times have we created the city of Asgard, how many times have we created the Hand of Thanos, right? Like how many times in games where you build assets in film, but you can't share them in games, right? Like all assets has always been a big major problem for us in the industry. So Tangent Labs had started building an asset management system. And so we are starting with the data and, you know, looking at the information model that Raji was talking about, right? The common data exchange model. And what Tangent brought to us was really the talent and also the thinking that they had been doing for 18 months trying to solve this problem, because they also had Tangent Animations, right? Which was the company that was building a lot of these animation productions. So we bought both Moxion and Tangent to bring over Jeff Bell and Hugh on the Moxion side to actually help us and get more insight into how we can do this in the future. So there's more to come. Like, I don't think we're going to stop, but we're definitely serious about and committed about being in this space and doing things through the cloud.
Great success story. So, and on the subject of acquisitions, Autodesk also just made an acquisition of a VR company called Wild, but we'd love to hear about how important XR is for Autodesk and if you're seeing a lot of usage of it.
I can take that one. I think when we look at Wild, we think of an environment which brings together design teams remotely in a way that they can actually create conceptual design or detailed design. And these remote teams can do that within the digital project in a way that they can pull the data together. And there's a lot of data, as you know, that we gather over the project lifecycle, which is starts with design, but then you have BIM data and everything else. And this team, it's not just within discipline, but even across disciplines. So you could have essentially your design team, your general contractor, and you could have your client, all of them actually working remotely through the tool. And that immersive and interactive experience that we believe is going to be truly beneficial for reducing project delays, expensive mistakes that happen later in the cycle, and earlier design decisions that I think are going to be really, really key. And I think as we look at this global investment around infrastructure bills and things like that, the remote teams are just going to be the normal way. There's no way you're going to have, you know, locally the best architects, the best GCs, the best people working here. It's going to be a global team working on these projects, and that's what this enables for us. There are about more than 700 customers, and we publicly share this information, that are using this in the AEC space. And we've had huge demand for things like VRED that we kind of is an equivalent technology that we use in automotive. But I think this is something that we want to expand as a platform and have it serve multiple industries for us. And when we met Gabe Paez and his team, it was exactly the same sort of, you know, vision in terms of enabling these sort of conceptual design and detailed design and being able to work across teams. And so it was, you know, we just starting with design, but really excited about taking it into construction and make processes as well, and really looking forward to that.
Great. So before we jump to our closing questions, you know, Patrick and I always struggle with our guest list for diversity. And so today, you know, we have the privilege to have two high-profile women in technology. So I have a question for you. Are you satisfied with the current state of affairs for women in tech?
No. So look, I think that we're making some strides, but I think, look, I've been in the technology industry for 25 years. You know, so I'm the executive sponsor for Autodesk Women's Network. So obviously I'm very passionate about this topic. I would say that we are, you still see only one or two in the room versus more than that. And so that's why I say no, because I feel like there's a lot more work to do, in getting women, in all organizations, especially in media and entertainment. But I would say, the one thing that I know now that maybe I didn't know then is that what's really important is that if you have that one or two right now, those are the people, the women that need support. Because I think what happens is there isn't enough support around them to like stay. and actually really invest and be committed to that diversity and diverse opinions, and you know that they just, you know, that people will think differently, whether that's a man or a woman, it doesn't matter. But I do think that one of the areas that we could do better as organizations is support the women in these roles, especially when it's much more male dominated than other areas. So pretty passionate about that. I can go on that topic for a long time, but yeah.
Yeah, Diana, and I can definitely go on this topic. You know, my upbringing, my dad never saw a difference between me and my brother when it comes to, you know, sort of having equal equality in terms of our career aspirations and, you know, investing in us in terms of our academics and things like that. When I came here, it didn't feel so different. As you grow up in your career and you take on different roles, leadership roles, it starts getting lonelier. And I think that's when people need the most support, to Diana's point. I can tell you, you know, Diana and I are blessed with Autodesk. We have an amazing set of women in our board, and we have more women, I think, sometimes in our CEO staff than otherwise. And, you know, we're all hanging out and having a really amazing conversation. And that feels different. And so the question is, how do we recreate it in all levels within the company? Right? And I think that's the hard part, is constantly being aware of it, investing in places where you think the person has 80% and the 20% can be built over time. And then half of it also the women putting up their hand and saying, you know, we can take that on with 20% more capabilities that I need to build, or even 50%. And my job has been, and I know in all our conversation, is like going to them and saying, you can do this. Take it on. You could do this. You could do role play. What's the worst thing that can happen? You could fail, you know, and that's okay. That's okay. And I think that's the part. It's a failure. And it's that, you know, it's that it might not still be enough for me, that sort of gets in the way of people taking these things. And I kept telling this, our job is to create the role models for the future. So I think that's the key thing, is being able to be open about taking risks and doing it. That makes people open to taking on new roles and bigger roles in companies and being able to do that.
Well, thanks for sharing. Very insightful. So, Patrick, you can move on with our closing questions.
Yeah, so we like to close the podcast episode with two final questions. The first is, we've covered a lot of ground, but is there anything that we didn't talk about that you'd like to?
All I can say is, I always want to talk about security and privacy with everything that we just talked about in metaverse and sensors and digital twins. You know, we're just going to be surrounded by all these intelligent data collectors. I think our focus on how to keep us safe and data private and yet get the insights is going to be a constant challenge for all of us going forward. It comes with both you know, the capability, including metaverses, identities, and how we protect that. That's why I think the Web 3.0 is always viewed with some amount of skepticism. And until it gets to be, you know, critical systems that people feel good about governance and accountability and privacy and all of that, it's going to be, you know, one that we greatly debate within our company, saying, is it ready yet? You know, are we there yet? Or can we use them? You know, that kind of conversations will continue to happen. I'm sure we'll see that and hear that in your podcast in the future.
Well, it's funny you say this, because we just recorded an episode on the safety and privacy with Stephanie Wong from the Oasis Consortium and Mark DeLura, because these are huge topics. They're a bit uncomfortable for us who are, you know, we're comfortable with technology and file formats. We're a little bit less when it comes to privacy and identity and safety, but you're absolutely right. These are huge topics, and we'll try to be part of that conversation as well. So is there, the other question, is there an individual, an organization, or an institution that you would like to give a shout out to today? So
I wanted to call out the Metaverse Standards Forum. So first, thank you, Patrick and Mark, because I know you guys have been spearheading it. I actually could not be at the meeting, but my group was at the meeting, and they got a lot of benefit from that. But I actually get excited about these type of things, because the fact that companies can come together, whether they're competitors, whether they're, you know, peer, like whatever that is, and be able to have this conversation around the future of the metaverse. I think things like Material X, USD, you know, OpenColor.io, like these are all things that we've been invested in. And so I'm super excited for us to also be part of this. So shout out to creating that metaverse standards forum.
Well, thank you. You know, Neil Trivett has been an important part, and actually this idea was born out of the, you know, episode number 2 of our podcast, was when we realized that David Mohan, the open source guy, didn't quite know Neil Trivett, the open standards guy, and we got everybody to talk. And I think now with 650 people, I don't know how we make an efficient conversation. That's going to be our challenge. So,
and Mark, not to add another 600 or more, I actually do see a lot of value in the Metaverse Standards Forum and the Digital Twin Consortium. In many ways, they're going after you guys are, you know, going after the same thing in many ways. I think thought leadership focused on interoperability, high compute data ingestion, machine learning, all of that stuff, visualization, simulation. Like, I wonder if there's how that will come together. But I think that, you know, I went up and searched all the players there. And might be worth thinking through that.
Yeah, especially since, it's not yet another standard defined organization. It's really a forum to inform and make sure, you know, the people in charge of standards actually, you know, take all the requirements into account. So we thought about reaching out. We actually had some inbound from Smarter Building Organization, the people who do BIM and everything. I think it's early. We need to find a way that works. You know, again, we have this ambition to be pragmatic and actionable. So we have to prove that. I think we have some, you know, on 3D interchange, like Diana mentioned, I think there are, you know, there are things we can be doing there. But yeah, we hope that, you know, we need to coordinate so much. I mean, Metaverse is about fully simulated worlds. So we're going to have to have everything in there, ultimately. So, well, fantastic, Raji Arasu and Diana Colella. It was fantastic to have you with us today. Thank you so much for your insight, for, you know, giving us a bit of insight on what Autodesk is about here and in the future. I want to thank our audience. We still get very, very good feedback on this podcast, and we hope that by continuing to bring you interesting guests, you'll see value in it. So please let us know, hit us on social, let us know what kind of topics, what kind of people you want to hear about, and we'll follow up. So thanks again, Raji. Thanks again, Diana. Patrick, you want to have one last word?
Yeah, thank you all for joining.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.